Andre the Giant gets slammed, Heaven's Gate ascends to Hellbop, and HBO's Roman Empire falls. This week on 30-2010.
30-2010, 30-2010. Three decades, every show, sometimes associated videos. 30-2010, 30-2010. The presses are awaiting as we're going to the 80s and the 90s and 2000s. On 30-2010.
Welcome to a new episode of 30-2010, your weekly look back at what happened 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago. That's 87, 97, and 2007. I'm one of your hosts, Brett Elston.
I am Chris Antista. Hi.
I'm smart guy Dave Rudden.
Oh. I'm dancing cat Diana Goodman.
I forgot to come up with a clever name.
I never do. So, if you are new to the show, we begin with a trip through the 80s, and we always go through a 7-day range of that exact year, 1987. Mm. We are on March 24th through the 30th, and this is what, the
first episode of spring?
First episode of spring.
Yeah.
Season 2000?
Season premiere of spring. It's getting late. It's like debuting later every year. I don't know why.
Season 1987.
Yeah, that's great.
It's actually never happened before Jesus. Canceled. Summer's just going to take time slots.
True.
But news really quick in this same week, L.A. Law's Harry Hamlin is named People Magazine's Sexiest Man Alive.
Damn it. Yeah. Where did I rank that year? Yeah. I know it was 5, but still.
Sexiest first grader? Kindergartner?
You were in there as a joke with your awful He-Man costume.
Moving into movies, March 24th. Mm. The Oscars were this week.
Oh!
Hosted by Chevy Chase? Chevy Chase. Goldie Hawn and Paul Hogan. Wow.
Fucking deal, yeah. Though. You have one. You come out with one movie, it's an international hit, and you get to co-host the Oscars.
It also means they had no faith in anybody in particular to handle hosting duties on their own.
Yeah, and I mean, he can roll with it. Like, I think that's part of his...
Chevy Chase?
No, Paul Hogan.
Okay.
Like he seems perpetually able, like, well, all right then.
Yeah. Crikey, why aren't there enough black people nominated?
But then Chevy Chase,
Mad Origines.
Chevy Chase is the holdover, though. He gets to host it himself the next year.
Oh. Really?
So he's the guy who impressed. Wow.
And somehow that puts the nugget of an idea in a Fox executive's head to give him a talk show.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The winners this year are Platoon for Best Picture, Paul Newman Best Actor, Marley Matlin as Best
Children
Actress.
Of Lesser God.
Oh, yeah.
We went through this on our Patreon Patreon-exclusive 30-2010 wrap-up episode for 86, 96, and 06.
And each of these, also, we talked about each of these movies individually throughout our 2016 episode.
It's a really fun episode, people. Check it out.
Michael Caine and Diane Weist?
Weist.
Come on.
Both out of Hannah and her sisters.
Best Supporting, Take My Breath Away, the best song from Berlin, the Top Gun soundtrack.
Top Gun has an Oscar.
Steven Spielberg wins the Irvin G. Thalberg Award and accidentally breaks it during his speech.
Nice.
Yep. That's kind of why I wanted to throw this in, because it's a fun clip. It's all visual, though, so I didn't grab it. But, you know, Spielberg, and he's got very 80s hair, sort of a curly mullet thing going.
Coming out of a trucker hat, even at the Oscars.
Know, they give him this award, and it's, you know, it's a lifetime producing award. And then he drops it, and the head part breaks off of the base.
Oh, no.
And he's like, oh, anyway.
Imagine it's like that tech TV where the guy just breaks the old record.
I know what you're talking about. That's amazing.
Yes. On the opposite end of the spectrum, the Razzies, Howard the Duck and Under the Cherry Moon tie for Worst Picture. You gonna have ties? Make a decision.
I suppose. How seriously are you going to take the Razzies?
Well, they should take it seriously. Mm-hmm. It's
their
award.
Yep.
Defeating Blue City, Cobra, and Shanghai Surprise lost that Best Picture.
I'm kind of shocked.
Cobra, what a treat. New movies this week, My Life as a Dog.
Yeah, some Swedish film released in 85, I think. I don't know. I was reading the bio and like, nah.
Yeah, well, it finally came to the U.S. It's kind of like the first international hit by Lasse Hallström, besides ABBA the Movie, which I forgot he directed.
ABBA the Movie?
But he's been sort of a go-to, like, Oscar Beatty kind of director. I mean, he did Gilbert Grape, he did Chocolat, so I guess he likes Johnny Depp. His most recent one was the dog movie that people were upset about.
The Dog's Purpose.
Yeah.
He did another dog movie?
Yeah.
It's his theme.
I'm guessing this is not about a man who turns into a dog.
No, it's not about a weredog.
It's not like the Shaggy Dog or like a talking cat.
No, sorry. It's like a child coming of age kind of thing.
I can think of at least two things wrong with that title.
Yeah. But also out this week, the Hanoi Hilton?
Yep.
Never.
Hanoi.
Only wanted to talk about the last one.
The mid-80s, man. That's when we decided, let's deal with Vietnam.
But now,
either by refighting it or being sad about it.
the big movie this week?
It's really good.
Less than 12 hours ago, this man had a good job and a promising future. Last night, he went on a blind date. Today, he's paying the price.
You're allowed 2 phone calls.
Hey, Ted, it's me. Walter. Your brother, Walter. And I'm just calling to thank you.
You know
for
that new sound you're looking for? Sorry, I love this movie. Not to be confused with Tina Fey.
Can
Steve
I get the
Carell's
title?
Movie.
Singer,
Bruce Willis. Watch this though.
Blind date.
Too visual.
Anybody out there got 10 grand for bail?
That's Bruce Willis turning to the audience in the trailer.
Wow.
It's I love 80s trailers so much. This movie's surprisingly good. Didn't know it was directed by Blake Edwards.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, it's a one night farce. It's I was really looking for the clip of Phil Hartman because I remember it so distinctly. Like, setting you up on a blind date, just don't give her any alcohol. She loses control. And I can't do a good Phil Hartman, but you know how he would have sounded delivering that line.
Have it your way, baby.
Is he channeling his Jingle All the Way creepiness?
Yeah. No, but he's like a young man.
Oh, your wife's alcohol.
Well, it's Kim Basinger, Bruce Willis, and John Larroquette.
Yeah.
And Kim Basinger is a very shy girl until she gets booze in her and goes fucking apeshit, and John Larroquette is the jealous ex-boyfriend who are chasing them the entire time.
Wow.
So it's this one night, like, I don't know,
in
like not quite over the top.
John Larroquette intimidate Bruce Willis?
He's a tall man. Ugh. And his hair adds like 6 inches.
Only if he's bringing Bull from Night Court with him.
The enforcer.
I don't know why. I do have an affection for this film. I really do. I think it's worth watching.
I mean, that cast alone like pulls me in.
That's... Just seeing this, I'm like, Bruce, is this why Moonlighting doesn't have an episode for like 3 months at a time?
Yeah. Well, speaking of Moonlighting, we're going to get into some television.
Mm.
To kick off television, the first ever Soul Train Awards airs.
The Soul Mass Transit System?
I didn't put this down, so I'm not really up on it.
But I just find it so weird because it's like it's kind of past the glory days of Soul Train.
Yeah.
And is this like their last grab for... But these are still around.
Yeah. So some of the winners were Janet Jackson and Luther Vandross.
Mm.
All right.
That's the villain from Star Fox, by the way. That's Andross, sorry.
On March 25th, 1987, Chris, NBC airs the special Down and Out with Donald Duck.
Yeah. Remember I said earlier that Down and Out in Beverly Hills was such a weird success. A lot of people adopted the monikers. I think every sitcom had an episode Down and Out or wherever
Mr.
the location
Belvedere.
Is. Yeah. And this is just a compilation of Donald Duck cartoons, but stitched together with some new.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like a mockumentary about Donald Duck falling from grace and getting fired or something.
I mean, I really do miss this. I think Donald Duck has the funniest. Bugs Bunny's the funniest cartoon character, but Donald Duck has the best cartoons in terms of both craft and humor. I think they could be repackaged forever in things that are not blam, and they're not anymore. And I kind of miss the days when they would just repackage shit from the 1940s and 50s, and like I was none the wiser. My family was entertained. I was entertained. It's great. I'd rather watch this than a TV movie about a missing baby.
I will get to those
because you know what happens next week. Another missing baby.
Yeah.
March 27th, 1987, on CBS, The Price is Right surpasses Concentration as the longest daytime game show in history. Someone tells me they still have that record.
Who could forget Concentration?
Well, it was classic Concentration, then classic Concentration.
Yeah.
But it was literally the board game where you turn over two things and if they match.
Are you kidding?
And then underneath is like a pictogram kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's
What the game was?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Gross.
Sometimes, that was a game show.
Yeah. Like, I think...
On television.
Yeah. There's a famous, like...
No wonder they fixed everything.
Pardon me. I was trying to get the...
There's a famous clip in the UK of I think it's still Concentration, but like someone turns over a piece and it looks like this cartoon is getting a blowjob because one piece is being... obscured, and then they turn it over, and it's just like he's like lassoing a dog. Like, I don't know.
So he lost that.
Yeah.
There you go. I love that sound
great
effect.
I love Price is Right, so well done.
That is the treat you give yourself when you have the day off school.
I love it, man.
And that's one of the few sound effects I've seen people bother to spell out in text on Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah, Price is Right losing more asterisks.
Bump, 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 bump.
Here's something for me. March 29th, 1987, WrestleMania 3 takes place at the Pontiac Silverdome, brother. The main event match was between Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant. Mm. It's one of the biggest main events in wrestling history.
Giant's last match?
No. He wrestled all the way up to WrestleMania 6, I want to say, or 7.
But this is the
big one, because Andre the Giant... quote-unquote, hadn't been pinned in his entire career. He had. And,
but the storytelling.
Yeah, but Hulk Hogan had been champion for years, and like this was his biggest threat ever. Mm. And Yeah, Hulk Hogan body slammed Andre the Giant in front of 90,000+ people. Mm-hmm. And yeah, WWE says that they had the attendance of 93,173. Mm-hmm. That may have been, you know, sweetened it a little bit. But
they're counting the rats.
It's the highest ever indoor attendance record at the time, and it stayed that way until the 2010 NBA All-Star Game.
Wow.
And WWE would also surpass their own attendance record with WrestleMania 32 last year.
I never get that, because isn't that only reliant on a new stadium?
Yeah.
These venues sell out, then yeah. Like you're just going to, every time a new stadium is built, you're going to break
the Cowboys,
record.
It was in Dallas. The Cowboys' new stadium is absurd. Yeah. So.
But
I guess indoor versus outdoor limits it, too. I mean,
yeah.
It's like you could have WrestleMania at the Rose Bowl, but no one's gonna be able to see it.
Yeah. So also at the show, one of the a wrestler's wrestling match, you could call it, like the match that so many wrestlers have to say is the greatest wrestling match of all time is the Macho Man Randy Savage against Ricky the Dragon Steamboat for the Intercontinental Championship earlier in the night. But it's like those two guys just like, you know, doing near falls, like, which you hadn't seen in a lot of matches back then, which, like, people just trading two counts.
Near falls, almost
losing.
Oh, okay.
Two and a half, and they kick out.
And just a lot of high-flying stuff, which you hadn't seen before.
A lot of forehead grabbing.
So when Macho Man died in, like, 2011?
Yeah.
Was it?
2011. Yeah. We did the five-year anniversary last year.
Yes. When he died, like, that is what started my, like, a little spark that has now grown to, like, I'm super invested in reading about wrestling. I don't watch all that much, but I went back and, because for whatever reason, this match was on Netflix and probably one of the million DVDs they had back then. And I remember, I want to watch some Macho Man wrestling, and I watched this one by sheer chance, and I was like, this is incredible.
Yeah.
And I haven't watched a wrestling anything in about 15 years at that point. And I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And was so taken with this match. Just, it's high energy, incredible.
Yeah.
And then leading into, like, watching more regularly.
Yeah, I had my whole period of wrestling is stupid, and then Macho Man died right around the time I was learning how to talk on a microphone and to just speak at that volume and be that character all the time is exhausting. And then he goes out and does painful ballet for hours on end, for even more time than that.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate him as an entertainer. Yeah. I really do.
This is really, like, the first big WrestleMania, because the first one was in Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. Second year, they did this stupid thing where they went to three different venues for WrestleMania. Didn't really work out.
Overcomplicated.
This is like 90,000
people. Like the Olympics.
Yeah. but 90,000+ people. The wrestlers come to the ring in like these motorized rings.
It looks awesome.
Like carts that are shaped like wrestling rings. It's so,
because the floor is so big, they can't walk to the ring in less than 5 minutes.
To get there.
I'm sorry, what was the name of the second wrestler?
Ricky the Dragon Steamboat?
Mm-hmm. Steamboat.
Steamboat, yes.
Toot toot.
He's Asian, but also Native American. So that's the mix.
So the Dragon Steamboat.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, like, his name is Ricky Steamboat, but he's Ricky the Dragon.
Yeah, like Macho, Randy Macho Man Savage.
You know, I understand where the quotes are, but his last name is Steamboat.
Vince McMahon likes to keep things both ethnic
actually,
and blue collar.
His real name is actually way cooler. It's Richard Blood.
What the fuck? Why?
What the hell?
I'm gonna call him Dick Blood.
Dick Blood.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But you don't want to. Vince doesn't like blood on TV.
I'm gonna make you piss me.
But the one other thing of note in this match was King Kong Bundy body slamming a little person, which is another like classic.
Man, the polar opposite of the main event.
Yeah.
He just ran it reverse.
And it was also like a dramatic departure. WrestleMania 2, he was in the main event. The next year, he body slams a little person. So it's like, oh, how the mighty have fallen. Chris, perk your
ears up. Yes.
March 30th, 1987, the final episode of Fraggle Rock airs after five seasons and 96 episodes.
A beautiful run. Did you have a clip?
I only have the theme if you want to.
I can dig it.
Yeah. But
I love this theme song. Yeah. It's great. The show is great.
I can tell you about the finale.
It's it is an actual finale.
Yeah.
Which a lot of shows don't get a finale.
No kidding.
And like what's beautiful, you don't know what Fraggle Rock is. It was made by hippies to teach them about the world. It was localized in every different country. The Fraggles live underground and have their own little ecosystem along with the Giants, the Gourds, but also humans. And they in different territories, they localize the humans. Uncle Travel and Matt would send a postcard from outer space, which was our world, to teach children about what was happening in their neck of the woods. It was different in Europe, different in America. And this was the episode where they combined them all and everybody broke the secret. They all came out.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Do you have a better description?
Called Change of Address. The description reads, having finally met, Gobo and Doc want to get to know each other, but this proves difficult because Doc and Sprocket are moving away.
Mm-hmm. It's really sad, and like the whole show, Sprocket has seen Fraggles but can't tell Doc about them, and they meet each other. Like Gobo and Doc talk. It's really, aww, it's really, really heartwarming. And the show is amazing. I wish it wasn't shot on a Canadian camcorder, because it can never ever look better than it does right now, which
Doc
is not great.
Finally explained to Fraggles the fear of nuclear annihilation.
You see, Sprocket,
the commies are going to blow us off the map.
Nuclear holocaust is something we've had to live in fear of for a long time.
Just like you, I'm going to live underground now.
I'm doing a very, very good Doc right now, and I've never tried it before. I want to compliment myself.
Why can't everyone just get along like the Fraggles?
Oh, I can't do a good Jerry Nelson, but love Gobo. He's one of my favorite characters ever.
And closing out the TV with some TV movies, because 87 is prime time for TV movies. March 24th, 1987, A Different Affair airs. Ooh. It's about a career woman who takes care of a runaway child. I have a promo clip for it.
Tuesday on CBS. A talk show expert who solves other people's problems.
It doesn't really sound to me like your husband wants to have an affair.
Suddenly, her successful lifestyle is disorganized by a homeless boy from a totally different world.
I won't go to a foster home!
Ann Archer and Tony Roberts, A Different Affair.
They say her life is turned upside down by a kid, the image is him dumping a whole pizza in her lap in the car.
Her whole pizza is turned upside down.
While she's driving, he's like, flip.
Yeah.
Cue the noid.
And March 29th, 1987, the TV movie A Stranger Waits airs. It's got a very intense promo, but Brett, you can actually watch it. Tell me if you think that logo at the end looks a little bit familiar.
Sunday on CBS, a chance encounter with a young stranger and a wealthy, lonely widow ignores all warnings, all suspicion, discovering too late she is his next victim. Suzanne Plachette trapped in a nightmare where a stranger waits.
Whoa.
Hello.
Okay, so it's called A Stranger Waits, and that logo...
That is Stranger Things.
Yes.
Really?
That's the same... Wow.
And that video has, like, 150 views.
Yeah.
So nobody knows... Like, I actually, like, that put me on, like, a 15-minute, like, where did that Stranger Things logo come from? And people say, like,
books?
Oh, Stephen King logos, this and that. And I'm like, no, this.
Wow.
This is, like, maybe they were inspired by
Stephen King,
but that
logos.
Is literally the word Stranger
in
a logo.
The word Stranger in the same
stranger
font.
Stranger in like, the same font, and, like, font Waits is below it.
Yeah. And,
like,
yeah.
Wow. But also.
I can't wait. You can put up a GIF on our Twitter and Facebook, like. 30 years ago today, this font debuted.
Yeah. But again, shout out to all of the 80s for the best music.
Warnings, trailers. All suspicion. Discovering too late, she is his.
That is awesome. God damn it. That was on TV every night.
Yeah.
Now all I get is like fucking Maroon 5 remixes.
What about the drum machines? Yeah. Those poor, ever since the drum factory machine died. Drum machine factory died.
My granddaddy built a drum machine.
I scored this on a pair of hit sticks. Don't even need real drums.
Video games, nothing that specifically could find in this range. The NES is still kind of quiet, but I think I missed RC Pro-Am.
Oh, beautiful game.
If we can believe the...
This is 90% of the music in the game.
Yeah. The NES racing game where you play little remote control cars.
Yes, it's a beautiful game.
Made by Rare, scored by David Wise, who, if you know game music, did Donkey Kong Country and a billion other amazing things. But this is the first game that gave me Nintendo thumb, where you would play so much Nintendo, you would get like blisters on your fingers, and they began to call it Nintendo thumb, because you have to hold down acceleration the whole time. But... It's like a Mario Kart thing where you get power-ups, you jockey for position, but like it's a isometric racing game, and it's super fun.
It's really fun. Power-ups.
Yeah, in those days, like this game
collectibles.
Was... Collectibles. Like, you could play this forever, and you get... Like, it was just so much fun.
Missiles.
But I think out in the U.S. this week, 30 years ago, and it would come to Europe apparently like a year from now, which is strange given that Rare is English developer.
I love this memory. My uncle was like the embodiment of the 80s and the 80s. Not so much my parents, but like the guy who was always sweating through a suit, driving around in his Saab, drinking wine coolers in his car. Like he always forgot my birthday. And the one year he didn't, he heard I got a Nintendo, and Nintendo games are expensive. My parents wouldn't get me another game. But he's like, I went into Kmart and asked him what the best game was. So I just got whatever that was. And
some guy doing a line said, I don't know, the one with cars in it?
RC Pro, and he handed me RC Pro-Am, and I couldn't wrap my head around it. And I returned it, traded it in to Kmart for Mickey Mouse to pay.
Oh,
the worst games. Traded one of the best games ever for one of the worst games ever.
Can I take? Can I throw this glass of water you have against the wall?
Yeah, I deserve it.
Will you hold that book so I can knock it out of your hand?
Here you go.
And it has a Dumbo sticker on it, so I can't now.
You put it on there.
I did not put that on there.
I just warned you.
I will say this is probably my favorite racing game on the NES.
Oh,
I mean,
sure.
There's not really a lot of competition.
Yeah, this is great.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And I have to say, it probably helped that I didn't know what RC meant as a kid. Yeah, so I was just like, these are cool cars.
I thought they were awesome cars because the cars changed as you went through the races.
And it stands for Royal Crown.
Yes. But had I found out, like, radio-controlled cars, I want to control a real car.
So this is a good chance to... this is the only real avenue I have for this. So the reason I got this game was because my dad was really into remote-control cars and airplanes and has been in magazines for the planes he's built that are, like, with turbine engines in them.
We had a track
in
your backyard?
So around 88, 89, 90, 91, we had a racetrack built in the backyard that was a dirt racetrack that he then built wooden steps and stadium lighting and in between running a hobby shop and driving a truck for as his actual job.
Is the ending of RC Pro-Am your dad giving someone a trophy?
We had races.
I'm Mr. Elston. Congratulations.
Friday nights and Sunday afternoons that was just... the whole, like, bumper to bumper, and we lived in the middle of nowhere, so it's like there was plenty of place to park, but it was just like people everywhere. Racetracks, we built a little ramp so the cars could get some air.
Oh, sweet.
And I and if you weren't racing, you could be one of the people standing on the perimeter of the racetrack because they don't have much weight, so they flip over and fall all the time. And we would like a ball boy in tennis. You run
there's not even much of a chance of getting hit in the head.
No. It was, but like, so this game and my peak 80s is like, but imagine that, and everyone is, again, peak 80s with the mullets, the hair, the fashion, while everyone is racing, remote control cars, to probably the Top Gun soundtrack. And like, that's like 3 years of my life. Wow. But anyway, speaking of music, taking us out of the 80s, The Circus, Erasure's second album, which was a big hit in the UK, with the hit Sometimes and another one, It Doesn't Have to Be. Into the Fire, Bryan Adams' fifth album. Even though it sold 2 million, it was considered kind of a failure given that his prior stuff sold 12 million copies.
Whoa.
Always and Forever, Randy Travis' second album. You should know Always and Forever.
Mm-hmm.
Which, man, what was the band that had the album last week that was Whatever and Ever?
Ben Folds 5.
Ben Folds 5, yeah. Incognito, Celine Dion's eighth album, which I assume was French. French. And also Dropping Bombs, The Smiths compilation, which is a U.S. counterpart, because in February last month they released in UK The World Won't Listen, which was them going, nobody listens to
nobody
our music.
Listens to our
no
music.
One plays the Smith songs on the radio. And so they, again, with this passive aggressive shit, they named their compilation album Dropping Bombs. I love the Smiths, but my God. We'll go out with Erasure Sometimes, which was a huge hit across the pond, and I guess here a bit as well. When we come back this same week, 1997.
Like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing. Actually, like, what happened? Netflix used to be like this, fucking new documentary about this thing I've never heard of. Will do. Click. And I haven't seen one in fucking months.
Yeah, I watched the Herzog Volcano documentary.
Where? On Netflix?
Netflix.
Holy shit.
It was good, but
I love that guy.
It was like really long, and they do not understand blue skies.
I mean, you know, he has an anime documentary out there. You did know that, right?
I've heard it,
I think it's about the internet. But
I don't know any details.
But he goes to an anime convention because I just wanted to see what this Attack on Titan thing was all about. We're all battling some kind of titan or giant.
I'm
in
a
our
big
lives.
Fan of Chobits.
The titan is our own ego. Just pretend you're a sad Arnold who lost his weightlifting championship now has to return to the sea to lay his eggs.
Can I find the Trigon fan sub?
I taste the despair when I ask how many episodes are left of One Piece, and I'm told 600. 600 One Piece episodes.
I have waited for new Umaru-chan episodes.
I have
in
calculated
despair.
What's left of my lifetime, and I shall never be able to consume this much One Piece.
At this rate, I would have to watch 1.5 episodes per hour.
Running on a loop 24/7 would be longer than the Simpsons marathon.
Werner Herzog.
Yeah, Werner Herzog. Get bonus time, Laser Time's weekly, full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as weekly full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, physical rewards, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again.
That is Notorious B.I.G. Hypnotize. Biggie Smalls. Bring this in tonight.
We gotta pour some out for him, though.
Yeah you got to. I've got coffee.
Was this a posthumous release?
Yeah.
Yes, Life After Death, the second and final Notorious B.I.G. album.
I can't believe you named it that.
Yeah, prescient. Nominated for 3 Grammys. We came in with Hypnotize. Rolling Stone called this a filler-free 2-disc rush of musical bravado. Everyone else just said this album's great.
Yeah.
They didn't need all this flowery language.
It took a hit off his Rolling Stone pipe.
But huge, huge album, hugely influential, and kind of the end of, I guess, the East Coast, West Coast, back at least on a national scale,
yeah,
maybe?
Yeah. No one, you know, pun not intended, is big, ended up getting knocked off after this. Well, I mean, there have been some.
Yeah, it certainly didn't end, but like the idea...
It
became
a lot more sporadic. It didn't seem to be so tit for tat.
And so focused on 2 personalities, I guess.
Yeah.
But also out this week, 1997, Take a Look Over Your Shoulder, Warren G's second album. Then, the earlier years, there might be Giants compilation that has stuff from the first album, Lincoln, and other stuff. Mm-hmm. Carnival of Chaos, Gwar's 6th and longest album... and they don't tend, reading up on this, it says they don't tend to play these songs live, which is kind of strange given that they had another album that they were like outright, we hate this album and it sucks and we don't want to play it anymore.
And the lead singer's dead.
Well, that. But when they would play, but Carnival of Chaos is one they don't seem to play songs from this when they would play live, and they never really like outright said, well, we're not happy with it. It was just kind of like, why didn't you guys play this? Anyway, Come In and Burn, Rollins Band's last album before Henry Rollins changes the lineup, as well as Dinosaur Jr.'s 7th album, Hand It Over, and I'll talk about this a lot more in September when it comes to the U.S., but Aqua's Aquarium, baby, and boy, am I going to go on for a long time about Aqua. Although, it's no Aquarius from 2000. Moving on.
What is?
Very, very little, frankly.
Indeed.
News this week on March 97. The Heaven's Gate cult. 39 members commit mass suicide to join the spaceship hiding behind the Hale-Bopp comet.
Yeah, and they made it. What's the problem?
As far as I know, I didn't get it.
I did it.
No, this is just a good for them.
But this is a cult that brainwashed a bunch of people and made them commit suicide. So.
Yeah. And then kind of like some of the first memes, I mean, almost, like online jokes.
The
and
picture
like,
of all the cots with their dead bodies in
right, because they all were wearing like brand new Nikes.
It's an SNL commercial.
Right, and they're like, just do it.
They do close-ups of all the victims' shoes, which are Nike swooshes, and then it just fades at the end, kids. The shoes for level-headed Christians.
Wow. But I remember that Hale-Bopp was a comet that passed close to Earth, and I think closer than Halley's Comet tends to.
Yeah.
And I remember running outside in my yard at night with the camcorder and you know tried to film it with a crappy giant box like a VCR on your shoulder basically which I had a dream last night that you bought one for Laser Time
a VCR camcorder.
A camcorder and I remember thinking like why would you do this?
Why won't we? Why don't we do that?
And I was like, does it have USB out or something? Like, I don't understand. You're like, no.
No.
Like, what are we going to do with any of the footage that we get?
Spend all our Patreon money on a camcorder?
We'll pop the tape in the computer. That's what...
But, yeah, so this comment passed by, and this Heaven's Gate cult said there's definitely a spaceship behind it. March 30th.
Yep. Actually, you know what's extra creepy is I think their website is still maintained. No. Like, there was someone whose job it was to stay behind.
Oh.
And be in charge of the website, and it's like still there.
Jeez.
It still does that.
I mean, a slice of history?
Yeah, that means there's someone left to interview. Listen up, documentarians.
That's the planet they went to, by the way. On March 30th, 97, the Bert is Evil website debuts.
Huh?
Bert from Sesame
Street. Oh, God damn it!
It'll become famous when a picture of Bert as Osama bin Laden is displayed at a rally in October 2001.
Yeah?
Yeah, so I spent a chunk of last week digging into the actual dates of memes and websites and stuff. And there's plenty. I mean, 2010 seems like that's the big year for memes, but I found little tidbits like this that I just wanted to share.
Well, your base was before, before this.
Invasion of the Gabber Robots is the song backing that up. But movies this week, Liar Liar is number one at the box office. We talked about it last week. Mm-hmm. Jim Carrey's I'm Kicking My Own Ass movie. another Robert Townsend movie.
Yes.
We're on like a 3-week streak of Robert Townsend.
Probably won't get to another one.
Cater, Georgia, and went to Hollywood.
You might want to go on home now because I'm here.
Fame.
A mansion. $10,000. Where he at?
Fortune.
Living large and taking charge, big boy.
And romance.
I ain't giving up no booty.
No. Took them.
This whole place is the bomb.
By surprise.
Oh, BAPS. Black American Princesses?
Yes, it is. Halle Berry's first starring role.
Wow, Martin Landau.
With Martin Landau.
Who plays an old man 20 years ago. Very much alive and acting.
Anyway.
Like, I love Aretha Franklin just about more than anything, but if respect shows up in a trailer or a movie, that movie sucks.
The march of death.
It's just the law.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like bad to the bone, and I feel good the same way, man.
American Son's getting there for me.
Yeah.
American Son?
Wait, you mean Fortunate Son?
Fortunate Son.
Yeah.
It ain't me.
Yeah. But the next one, I think, has another song that's a hallmark of a bad movie.
Oh, no.
I don't know.
For Kenny Tyler, having a ghost for a brother is incredible.
Halloween's gonna be the bomb.
But to everyone else,
it's back. Look at him. You really bugged.
It's unbelievable.
Oh, the basketball movie.
Sixth Man.
Where you're...
I've seen this.
It's where Arnold Schwarzenegger fights the devil.
No.
With
it's
a clone.
Sixth Day. Wow.
But this is, Marlon Wayans, fresh off of, or still doing the Wayans Brothers on WB. This is his first starring role in a movie. Yep. He would do a lot of like the scary movie stuff. But him and Kadeem Harrison, who is Dwayne Wayne, I think,
from Different World.
Yeah, Dwayne Wade's an actual basketball player.
Right.
Dwayne Wayne is a fake basketball player in this movie, but he dies. He and his brother goes on the basketball team to honor him, but Kadeem Harrison helps out Marlon Wayans with all his ghostly powers to make him a better basketball player.
If you're dying for shitty slapstick comedy and fucking Unreal Engine tutorials, CG,
I remember liking it at the time.
Man. Well, you were an idiot, Dave, in 97.
For what it's worth, the song
you were 10 years away
was,
off that Sexiest Man Alive
was by Two Unlimited. That's the song.
I'll put this up against Space Jam any day of the week.
Probably. Yeah. But also this week with Scott Bakula, Jasmine Guy, and Don Knotts.
Let me hear it.
Wow.
Nothing's going to stop audiences everywhere from enjoying a brand new world of animated fun, excitement, and adventure. Cats Don't Dance. See you in the movies.
Not Don Bluth.
Songs by Randy Newman.
Songs by Randy Newman, hot off a Toy Story.
Yeah. So this movie made, $7.25, because that's about how much I paid. I'm literally like the only person I know who saw this. I don't even know why.
It looks really cool, though. It's
animated very well.
Yeah, there's definitely some CG hybrid stuff, but it's really subtle.
Yeah, this is a time where everyone decided, if Disney keeps cranking these things out, well, let's get some of that pie. This and Anastasia, I think, were the attempts at other studios to make Disney-style musicals. And
yes, and like, where's its
music?
This
lost so much money.
How did it fail? How did it need any money with that cast?
Yeah, exactly.
Did they run out of the money first?
The cast is just Scott Bakula and Angela Bassett. That's as big as it gets.
And Don Knotts.
But it's directed by Mark Lindahl, effects animator for Disney on Little Mermaid and Rescues Down Under, who left to do this, but then would return to direct Emperor's New Groove and Chicken Little.
Emperor's New Groove is so good.
I have not seen it.
It's really good.
I have not seen it.
I haven't seen it since 2002, but I'm sure it was great.
But Cats Don't Dance, one of those forgotten 90s animated movies, looks real neat.
Yep. Oh, I can tell you why I saw it, because it is the last project of Gene Kelly.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
He worked on choreographing the tap dancing cat.
make the cat kick higher.
Yeah. No, you do it like this, damn it.
Yeah. Ow.
My hip.
My days, cats knew their place.
Well, speaking of silly accents, if you want to hear Brad Pitt's Irish accent.
The Devil's Own. We brought this up on a Laser Time episode about bad accents. And I couldn't find the clip we used there, but this is pretty bad. Because Brad Pitt's still a young actor at this point. He's a much better actor now.
Yeah.
I'm in a bind. I don't have time to explain. I'll get my gear and I'll clear out.
What's the money for? I was thinking guns. I was thinking IRA.
I was thinking road trip.
I need that money, Tom.
It's fine. It's not going to get any better than that.
I'm just transfixed here.
I think I tried to put together a show to mock Grimm and his Irish roots by playing a bunch of bad Irish accents from films, and that's definitely one of them. It's about Harrison Ford as a cop guy and Brad Pitt as an IRA guy. It will not hold up, I assure you. I watched it and do not remember a fucking thing.
Guess the biggest...
Mm-hmm. Look, I think it's crazy that it's almost 20 years to the day that the next movie came out.
So 20 years ago this week, and a flop for what it's worth, but here we go.
It's time to power up. The world's most famous action force is back on the big screen. With a secret weapon.
I'm the new Blue Ranger.
What are you talking about?
A giant problem.
Turbo, a Power Rangers movie. The Power Rangers second movie. Mm-hmm. 1995 was the original one, which was this big-ish budget CG monsters, it's CG awful. Zords, and it's fun.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Strangely good soundtrack.
Well, they cherry-picked the top hits.
If you like Chili Peppers, and they might be giants.
It's like, why would the Power Rangers movie need that soundtrack?
Yeah.
Like,
well, this movie budget slashed big time because it's basically the show.
Yeah,
they have the Megazord costumes, a lot of the suitmation stuff, as you know, people would call in Japan, like Super Rai Productions, like where you put actually someone in a suit rather than CG.
Did it use existing Japanese footage though?
So this is as far as I know, completely everything filmed in this is new.
Yeah,
it was made to bridge the off TV Power Rangers Zeo and Turbo, because in between there's like.
Do you know what's cooler than dinosaurs? Cars.
So yeah, they all get car zords, and I made a GIF like a week or so ago because I had forgotten. I watched a couple episodes of the show, but in this movie, man, and in the show, the Zord, everyone knows of Power Rangers, they summon the Zords and they come running from what looks like 6,000 light years away.
No, I don't know that.
It's not even seen a clip.
Everything you just said sounded like you were speaking Russian to me. I've never understood.
A clip of a Power Ranger summoning a Zord?
I don't know what a fucking Zord is. I remember seeing that in ads where they're like, new Rangers, new Zords. And I'm like, what? What?
Do you know Voltron?
Now,
you know Voltron?
No, yeah, I know Voltron.
It's just the same exactly thing. Like
so why don't you say giant robot?
Because that's what they're called.
It is a new.
It's an
over 20-year legacy.
Or 30-year-old
term.
Or mecha robot fighter. Or super killer robot stabber dot.
Look, I'm sorry.
God.
At this point,
that
it's
would
like
fly
not
in Japan.
No, look,
it's like not knowing what a lightsaber is. I'm sorry.
No, look, I aged out of this one, all right?
I understand.
All right, I'm in college at this point. I never watched the show. I don't think my little brother watched the show, which is how I got exposed to some of this other stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I know I only have a couple years on you guys, but because I always watched stuff for grown-ups, even when I was a kid, that gap is even wider.
Yeah.
So this is all gibberish. This is shaking keys in my face entertainment.
But
I have
Diana,
no idea what is happening.
What about Zordon and Alpha 5?
Well, you got a point there. No, you're
what
right.
We do have a commentary.
Question, though, is Alpha 5 a planet or a robot?
Planet?
No, it's not! It's a robot! Yay, yay!
It's a sassy robot who's incapable of doing almost anything.
Oh, that's great.
We do have a commentary, Diana, on our Patreon, patreon.com/lasertime.
Will it catch me up on everything?
It's the first episode of Power Rangers. It'll explain everything. It really doesn't take that long.
Good.
So you're really going to love this part.
This is a huge gap in my knowledge I really wanted to fill.
So, but for what it's worth, like, this is definitely where I was like, I'm out.
This,
like,
yeah. One moment in this movie was like, I'm 12 for this.
Finally watched the movie way later, and it was still fun in the same way that I can tolerate. I watch every Godzilla movie, and I don't find it as entertaining as those, but it was still like, I appreciate all the
fun practical
effects and practical stuff and the costumes they have to build, and that means someone has to be able to move in them and like emote, and like I like the craft of that, so I can enjoy the movie in that level. The drama that they make when they brought it over with a lot of the characters, once I aged out of 13, 14, it was like, I don't care. And Power Rangers would go on to have a new iteration literally every year up until the moment I finished this sentence. So This is still like literally 20 iterations of Power Rangers ago.
Jesus Christ.
So the movie was kind of a flop, but it did introduce a new villain that would end up to be on the TV show. The Red and Pink Rangers come back. Because at this point, Kimberly, the Pink Ranger, Jason,
Amy Jo Johnson,
the Red Ranger, that anyone's...
I think it was weird for star power.
Yeah, they were their star power.
Because
yeah.
everyone else is like, they've only been on the show for a year, and like, who cares about...
Trini was gone.
So that's like, the big misunderstanding.
Like Rocky and like... Yeah,
The Power Rangers show is dependent on the Super Sentai footage shot in Japan by those visionary model builders and choreographers over there. And whenever they make a movie, they don't have that footage to rely on, so they have to play up the interplay between these terrible actors.
Yeah, they're not great actors,
and occasionally rely on their own fight scenes and effects. And it looks in the first Power Rangers movie, it looks terrible. Mm. It looks terrible having to watch these people fight without masks on. Yeah. I want to see you get super skinny. I want to see the resolution change and you get skinny every time the Power Rangers fights. That's what I'm used to.
But yeah, for me, like, I'd been watching Power Rangers since the start, like 1993.
Yeah.
And even then, I was too old for it.
Yeah, I felt too old.
I was secretly watching it, like, every day after school, still watching Power Rangers, even up to Zero. And this movie, a kid becomes a Power Ranger. A kid who's, like, a good 3 or 4 years younger than me. I'm like, I'm too old.
Yeah.
This, like... Because I was watching, like, I'm a high schooler like these guys. It's fine.
It's a message, like, shot across the bow. Like, this is who this is for.
Yeah.
Not you. Yeah. And people younger.
It's a 12-year-old kid who, like, discovers their secret. And they're like, well, you should be a ranger then. Because Billy, the Blue Ranger, was like, I think he's... I'm not going to explain why. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
And then in the show... So I did pay attention still. Then in the show, when he morphs, he becomes the size of the rest of the Rangers.
He's an adult. It
makes no sense.
Yeah. What?
But he still has the voice of a kid.
Yeah.
Oh, that brings up a lot of legal questions.
Yeah, what happens if he gets hot on one of the other Rangers? Mm-hmm. Like, if they hook up in the costume...
That's fine, but... It's
No.
He slams a Suntory
vodka. But what about Big? What about the movie Big? Is that legal?
I have to be emotionally 21, 65. How old is it? Okay.
Wait,
can I have sex?
We're really calling Elizabeth Perkins a statutory rapist for Big?
Yeah,
she had no idea.
Well, she had no idea, but he couldn't legally consent.
Oh my god!
But she didn't know.
Oh my god.
You know.
That movie out this year? It was great.
Yep.
But anyway.
What about when Jack asks out his teacher, Robin Williams Jack?
So we spent more time talking about Turbo than anything else in the show.
Oh, boy.
But anyway.
But it's a great segue from Turbo into
Billy Crystal hosting the 69th Weed Academy Awards. English Patient wins Best Picture. Mm-hmm. Best Director is Anthony Minghella.
Yep. So yeah, these are all English Patient kind of swept it.
Oh,
so.
Best Supporting Actress. Best Score, Best Sound, Best Art Direction, Cinematography, Costume, Editing. Other awards are Jeffrey Rush winning Best Actor for Shine, Francis McDormand winning for Fargo, Cuba Gooding Jr. winning Best Supporting Actor for Boat Trip, Jerry Maguire, and Independence Day winning Best Visual Effects.
Yes, Independence Day has an Oscar.
For what it's worth, the effects in the movie are still pretty good because the practical effects that
a lot of real explosions that look amazing.
And then when you see some of the matting on the CG, it's pretty bad.
Meanwhile, on the Razzies, Striptease just swept everything.
Nice.
Which is kind of a shame for Island of Dr. Moreau. I think Brando is their only win there.
We'll hear from Val Kilmer next week.
Ooh.
TV this week.
Well, going off the sixth man, the NCAA tournament ended this week, and the winner was the University of Arizona. The only year they ever won it was 20 years ago, 1997.
Well, my team ain't the fighting tumbleweeds.
But also of note this week, on March 26, 1997, Smart Guy debuts on the WB.
He's a smart guy.
Let's get the theme there.
Oh, why do I remember this? Am I watching Smart Guy?
Hey, you think they treat their audience with a little bit smarter.
I've never heard of this.
Smart Guy... It stars Taj Mowry, who is the little brother of the sisters
from Sister.
Yeah. It lasted 3 seasons and 51 episodes. It was about a smart guy, a middle schooler who is so smart. Mm-hmm. He's a genius. He goes to high school with his brother and sister who are older. Mm. And that's all I remember about it.
Wackiness ensues.
Yeah, that's actually it for TV. It was kind of a light week.
An interchangeable sitcom plot.
Yeah.
Games this week, kind of a big, if you're a PlayStation RPG fan, Vandal Hearts came out this week, 20 years ago. Konami, strangely enough, has a hit RPG series.
Two at this point.
Seven classes. It's like a, you know, if you, this is before Final Fantasy Tactics or a modern equivalent like Disgaea or another tactics game that I'm playing, Shining Force, things like that. But it stood out a lot at the time and has a great soundtrack. We did a VG Empire about it a while back, and the composer actually found out and was like, thanks. Yeah. But I guess, I don't know, you played more than I did.
I played through this twice. It's one of the few RPGs I've played through more than once. Because one of the things is with the classes, when you get to a certain point, you can change into one of two classes, and it makes your character way different and look way different. Like, so if you're an archer, you can be like, you can either turn into like a, I think they call them a brigadier or something. So they, you basically have wings and can fly and have a spear you can just like poke people with.
Like a Valkyrie looking
kind of. Or you can just become like a super archer. You've got like a cooler bow. You can shoot further. So like I played
and
through twice.
And you have sour cream and guacamole.
Yes. So yeah, I played through twice just to see like the different designs you get when you like when you go one of two ways. Also like they have this basically kind of how, like how Super Mario World had those like lost levels or whatever they call them, Star World, where
Star
like
Road,
insanely difficult levels.
Yeah.
Vandal Hearts also had like this, I forget what they call it, like the road to whatever.
WrestleMania.
Yeah, but when you do the, like they are super hard challenges, like, you know, tactical RPG challenges, but once you do it, you basically unlock like debug mode the character. You can do like spells that just cover the entire map.
Wow.
I like the reason I even like got interested in it because I thought it was kind of a sequel to Suikoden because it's about a liberation army just like Suikoden is, but like the soundtrack is great. It was the first time I had ever really played a tactical RPG with you know, like, you know, squares and figuring out
it's on a grid and you control multiple units.
Yeah, and when you kill an enemy in this, they basically become a geyser of blood.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I do remember that.
Yeah. So it's always an awesome like moment when you kill somebody in this game. Also, the first game I ever saw the word shit in.
Wow.
And it's so weird because it's like three quarters of the way through the game. You've probably been playing for like 15 hours.
You've earned this.
Like one of the characters like is kidnapped. Like basically like teleported away during like an important battle. Like you needed this person to win the battle. And one guy just like ... shit. And I'm like, wow. Like, you used it once. You used it very effectively.
You earned that T rating.
Yeah.
But yeah, Vandal Hearts, 20 years old.
This was them for sure.
Oh, was it? Yeah, because the aforementioned
guys. And then they learned like, well, if we're going to be an M, we might as well throw a curse in there.
Yeah. And then it had a sequel later on, like 2000, I think. 99 maybe.
Which I never played.
Also out this week, the unfortunately named Ball Blazer Champions. which is Factor 5 and LucasArts making an update to an old Atari/C64 game that's like a fake sport league in the future or whatever. But Ball Blazer Champions.
Slam Ball or GTFO.
Toshinden 3.
Hey, it's over.
Battle Arena Toshinden, which was a PlayStation 1 launch game, and then Toshinden 2 was 96, I think. And then Toshinden 3, this is kind of where this... It had a little bit of heat around it as a 3D fighting game in the vein of Tekken or Soul Calibur, or Soul Edge, I guess. But it predates those. Well, anyway, not Tekken. But this was... I played 1 and 2 a lot, and then this one came out, and it was like, I don't care anymore.
It's all arena-based, which is so weird.
There's no ring outs, which if you played Virtua Fighter or anything where you
we have a video on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/lasertime, of just all... where you can ring out in your victory pose.
Yeah. If you're
hooray, I did it!
Yeah, and now there's none of that. But because of that, the walls let you juggle, you know, Tekken style, and it's like, it's just a different thing, and I rented it once, and none of my friends were into it. But speaking of Tekken, Tekken 3 is out this week in arcades. We will talk more about this when it comes
Tekken
to PS1, because the PS1 version was like a technical marvel at the time.
It has gone. It's better.
And then also out this week in Japan, another huge thing that I'll defer till the U.S. releases, Castlevania Symphony of the Night.
Whoa!
20 years old, and can't say enough nice things. But this is finally with games and taking us out of the 90s. This date was hard to pin down because some say February and some say this week in March, but fuggin' Blast Corps, another Rare game from who did RC Pro-Am before, but Rare, a Nintendo 64 game that starts, this is one of the best games of all time.
This is
in my top
so
10, maybe top 5, probably not top 5.
It's one, a good technical showcase for any new particle effects, explosions, and two, just like an awesome variety of gameplay yes. based on one simple premise,
the
which is...
The premise is there is a nuclear truck with carrying bombs that is out of control and cannot deviate from its course. Hmm. And if it hits the slightest bump, it's going to set off this nuke in the middle of the country. Your job as the Blast Corps is to get into bulldozers... Well, it starts with the bulldozer. And within an hour, you are a gymnast robot doing backflips through buildings.
A fishtailing dump truck.
Yes.
A hot rod.
To clear the path of every building, water tower, school, whatever's in the way. And that's the game.
Yeah.
And why this isn't a launch game for every console that ever comes out when it's like, hey, we have better textures, we have better draw distance, we have better particle effects. Make more of this. This is a good idea literally forever. This will never not be fun.
Yeah.
And it was... absolutely captivating, and I was so infatuated with this, and like it tracks your time and your progress, and you can get better
medals.
There's
a lot of depth to it.
You eventually unlock bonus levels on the moon!
Yeah.
Oh.
And you have, like...
on
you know,
every planet.
Every you go through the whole solar system, and one of the last challenges is clearing the path for a space shuttle to land.
Yeah.
And it just starts with, I'm on a bulldozer clearing some stables out of the way, and it just escalates from there, and it's so good. It's on Rare Replay, which is on Xbox One.
Wow,
and
you can get two games in the Rare Replay from
this
episode.
Yeah, they're both in there. Can't recommend that enough. And we'll go out of the 90s with a song from the Blast Corps soundtrack, which I did a whole episode about this on VG Empire as well, because Graham Norgate, who did GoldenEye, Perfect Dark, Killer Instinct, onto Time Splitters and the other Time Splitters games and stuff all the way up to like this year with Homefront, one of the Homefront games. Incredible Blast Corps soundtrack that runs from like goofy country twangy stuff that I have to go out with because what other choice do I have?
Simeon Acres!
Yes! Two other, dare I say, cooler songs than this.
It is. But it's the superior Cotton Eye Joe.
This is such a treat when you get there in the game, but the rest of the music in this game is like basically just badass. Mm. 90s vague industrial dance techno stuff, but we'll go out with Blast Corps, Graham Norgate, Simeon Acres when we come back this week in 2007.
Time to get moving.
The ships at sea. It's time for Diana's Classic Corner. We look even further back in time this week to see if there's anything worth a watching. In the week of March 24th through 30th, you know, not really. 1942, 75 years ago this week, we got two Yanks in Trinidad and to the shores of Tripoli. So everyone's off traveling because there's a war on. 50 years ago this week, March 25th, 1967, marks the first time the Who perform in the U.S. God damn it. And they busted all their guitars, and then they burned the place down, because the Who rule. So since I don't really have a movie to recommend this week, I have been waiting for a week where I could finally bring up one of my favorite books about filmmaking, Pictures at a Revolution, Five Movies, and the Birth of New Hollywood by Mark Harris, which is entirely about 1967, and specifically the making of the five films that were nominated for Best Picture, because they are so endemic of the era. They are... Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, In the Heat of the Night, The Graduate, Bonnie and Clyde, and Dr. Doolittle. Fucking Dr. Doolittle. It's so interesting because you got, you know, big Hollywood stab at relevance with something like Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, something very, very European with Bonnie and Clyde, something talking about the, you know, divide in society and ennui and the generation gap with The Graduate, and it is meticulously researched, really readable, really fun. So that's my recommendation of the week, Pictures at a Revolution by Mark Harris, and I'll see you later. Stay classic.
Subject, could we change the subject now? I was knocking on your ears, don't believe you were always out.
looking towards the future. We were begging for the past. Well, we know we had the good things, but those never seemed to last.
Yeah, oh, Modest Mouse, Miss the Boat, off their album We Were Dead Before the Ship Even Sank. which was supposed to be, well, it was their fifth album, and it did pretty well, I think. It was their first album after Float On and that whole that 2004 era where they hit it really big.
Mm-hmm.
And it was supposed to be a concept album with, like, a very nautical theme, and the...
Oh!
Yeah, as if it doesn't already sound like a bunch of pirates singing anyway. But, man, what was the, like, Dance Hall... It wasn't called Dance Hall Days, but anyway. They had a song in the last one that was very nautical. But according to the wiki, there was supposed to be a bit in this where every song was going to be about a group of people on a ship dying in every song a different way.
Edmund Fitzgerald over and over again.
Yeah, so I guess it didn't quite happen. But, I mean, I have no ill will towards Modest Mouse. No, and Float On is one of those songs where I'm like, I know this is one of those Filter, Take a Picture, or mm-hmm. Green Day, Time of Your Life. You stop there. I guess for Green Day, it was all the way back to... When I Come Around, but
I was mildly involved in like the indie music scene in my hometown of Tallahassee, Florida,
mm-hmm.
and Modest Mouse was huge and came to Tallahassee like every other weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And Modest Mouse is coming back. You coming? Like, and I even got tired of seeing them. And then like right at, they were still doing that, and Float On became a huge hit. And they pretty much said, we're going to play two nights for free at this venue, and we're probably never coming back.
Because
oh, yeah. there's not a venue big enough to hold us in this fucking podunk town. So they played two free shows and never came back to Tallahassee.
Them and the Boston seem to be in your out-of-your town a lot. In the 90s and
no,
the
2000s. No, the Boston's were just on every single like group tour ever.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Also out this week, Good Morning Revival, Good Charlotte's fourth album.
The best one, right?
Entertainment Weekly had it on their worst of 2007
album. Oh.
Macy Gray's Big, Return of the Mac, not that one.
Ah.
This is from Prodigy.
Oh my God.
And not that Prodigy.
Yeah.
But a rapper named Prodigy has an album called Return of the Mac.
What is he doing?
Which was the most twisted confusion of all my 90s nostalgia where I'm like, wait, what? with producer The Alchemist. Not Full Metal Alchemist.
This is Lemonade from Madonna. Like, you can't do that. You can't do that.
And then Tim McGraw's ninth album, Let It Go.
Tim McGraw also played the Tallahassee 4th of July almost every single year.
He's a good boy.
Free show.
He's one with the wind and the stars.
But movies this week, 2007, Blades of Glory.
Hey.
Will Ferrell, John Hader, Amy Poehler.
You are to be stripped of your medals
what?
And banned from men's figure skating no! for the remainder of your lives.
Now, two rivals.
Michaels. McElroy.
I see you got fat.
I see you still look like a 15-year-old girl, but not hot.
Will join forces.
What do you guys have that none of the other teams have?
Mr. Incredible.
Matching junk.
Exactly.
Ah, Blades of Glory. I don't love this movie, but it has a ton of fans now.
Yeah,
I was so stoked because I loved Anchorman so much, and I thought this would be that.
It's also part of like the Will Ferrell is a funny sports guy trilogy.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just thinking, how many other sports do we need to throw
into? NASCAR, that NBA, or not NBA, but semi-pro.
No, yeah, semi-pro. I was like, is this the one with Stephen Colbert as the commentator? No, it's not. Yeah. There's another movie where he commentates in Will Ferrell slapstick.
We talked about this a little bit on last year, I guess, that we did an Olympics episode, because it's about... They bypass some thing where it's like,
they're banned from individual skating, but can do pairs,
and they can do. They're the only male pair amongst all these.
Pairs. Like not only Amy Poehler but Will Arnett playing brother and sister, but they're married in real life.
Yeah.
And they seem to want to fuck each other.
Yes,
anyway.
It's wonderfully creepy. I love it. They're great. They're both great together in Arrested Development. It's one of the few like celebrity. The celebrity relationship is like, no, this can't end.
I know. It's sad. But yeah, I guess it did okay, but it was number one this week.
I own this on HD DVD, so I know yet another. It's like a 2-week streak, I think.
Why are you guys hanging on to these things?
Why?
You know, that Sunday's going to come where I need to pull out my HD DVD player and watch Blades of Glory.
I'm going to watch In the Land of Milk and Honey and Chris.
And then I'm going to watch Honey after that. And then Milk.
Look, once my Xbox 360 HD DVD player stops working, maybe then I'll get rid of them, but until then.
Yeah, can you verify that it hasn't broken yet?
Oh, no. I actually haven't used it in years.
You can.
Yeah, so maybe it's time to... let me recommend the book for you.
Literally holding on
to
it.
But I spent $2.99 for it at Fry's.
There's also the movie The Lookout.
JGL and Jeff Daniels.
It's the directorial debut of Scott Frank, writer of Get Shorty, Out of Sight,
oh,
Minority Report, and The Wolverine.
Yep.
Wow.
I don't know that he's directed another major motion picture since then. About a bank janitor witness size. Who cares? Chapter 27, a controversial film that I forgot about entirely, where Jared Leto gained almost 70 pounds to play Mark David Chapman, whose claim to fame
is killing
taking John Lennon from us.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where it's like, wow, you physically transformed yourself for this role. You're not that good at it.
And what's weird, like, up all you need to look up, not the movie, not the trailer, the movie poster, because it's just Jared Leto's fat face.
Yeah.
That's all it is, just swelled and like taking over the whole poster.
I give him, he looks just like Mark David Chapman. Yeah. I give him that. But
has anybody put Joker makeup on this thing yet?
First of all,
just write cursive imagine on his forehead.
First of all, this movie's supposed to be absolutely horrible. And second of all, it kind of bugs me because Mark David Chapman killed John Lennon specifically to become famous.
Yep.
So let's all forget his name, shall we?
Yeah.
Let's not actually
apparently
give him what he wants.
That's one of the drivers for most killers in general. Like,
that's one of them.
The infamy.
For, yeah. So
becoming something.
Yeah, so let's not use his name again.
It's a terrible segue into a Disney film. The more notable film.
This spring, the first visitor to the future
will
discover a strange new world and a family.
Lewis, meet the Robinsons.
I don't know what
that,
it is.
Can't you guess what the movie
hang
is?
Hang on, that?
It's even stranger.
Great. Meet the Robinsons.
It says
which,
the title, yo wins the prize.
This is a Disney movie?
It is. It doesn't look or feel like one, but it is also in the middle of a big Disney transition.
I see the cast list, and I'm like, that's a Disney movie? That's Disney gets better celebrities
They've done Chicken Little, and they're coming off of Home on the Range and kind of not wanting to return to traditional animation. And it is the most dream work. It's not bad. It's not good. Great. It's just kind of is. It's one of those movies you won't really ever see acknowledged.
I saw that it had Tom Selleck in it, I kept cross-referencing
the biggest star in the film
to make sure this wasn't an 87 movie.
Yeah.
I was like, there's no way.
He's the big, and if you look at it, just like it's all professional voice actors who voice the lead, so that's pretty neat. It does have a little bit of a little tragedy behind it because of the history of the Disney company. I'm sorry, I'm a Disney nerd. I'll try and make this brief. This was right, if you can remember, back when Pixar was threatening to leave Disney, and basically Disney had to buy Pixar and then offer all the stock in their company, and John Lasseter, the head of Pixar, all of a sudden becomes the head of Disney Animation overnight. So all of a sudden Disney has two CG movie houses. So this is the 10th anniversary of this, if you can recognize this. I get goosebumps. Look at that. So obviously that's Steamboat
that
Willie.
Bugs Bunny
but that's the Walt Disney Animation Studios open slate. Which before, Disney never had to make the distinction because they didn't have another animation house. So
that's why they did that.
Well, yeah, and it's because Lasseter came in, saw the movie, and like, I don't like it. Let's make a bunch of changes. So it was delayed by almost a year. A lot of changes happened, including a change in puberty for the lead actor whose voice changed. And you can make it out if you want to that there's two different voice actors for the lead character, Lewis, in the film because it took so long to make it. 4 years in development. It's one of the first bits of meddling that Pixar did once they took over creative control of Disney. But it's also, I think it's most interesting for the first time Disney had to distinguish, this is our animated movie. Like, we all would have thought this is a Disney animated movie. Unless you told us otherwise. But now I recognize that's not the case. They have a huge live action division. That's the premiere of that logo. It's only been 10 years.
Wow. I've never seen it in my life.
Yes, you have. Yep. You've seen it on Frozen.
Was it in Frozen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's on their shorts. If you ever saw Paperman or anything else, like, what, really? Feast? You never saw The Beast?
Yeah.
You always use the scene skit to just go right to Let It Go.
I guess so. I mean, it's just permanently.
You're thinking of me. If you load up my Amazon right now, it'll be paused on Let It Go, where I cried and went to sleep right after that happened.
But TV this week.
A couple things worth noting. March 25th, 2007, the finale of Rome on HBO, which is not Jim Rome. I thought that was, I thought he had some sports show.
He did on Showtime.
But this was about a sprawling cast of characters, many based on real figures from historical records.
Yeah, the two central characters are totally fictitious, yeah. And they would just sort of interact with
Lucius
all these
Lucius Verinus and Titus Pullo.
So this is like a multi network production, and before it aired they're like, we're renewing this for like 9 seasons. Then HBO was like, we rely on subscribers, and this is the most expensive thing we've ever done. We're done.
But yeah, it's like BBC in the UK, like some French channel or Italian channel.
And it's the same thing.
If you look at it now,
and they're filming in Rome in Cinecittà studios,
mad CG.
Yeah,
if you look at it now, it sucks because it's like, I can't tell. Like, I can't tell if this is special or costs more.
Well, they had trouble. I mean, there's a lot of things where it's like, there's going to be, like, this massive historical battle, and you're like, oh, man, this is going to be great. And then, you know, you pretty much have, like, a shot of, like, a boot in the dirt and, like, a sword falling, and they're like, we won! We defeated the 900 battle elephants! And you're like, motherfucker!
You couldn't buy one?
Because it's just too fucking expensive. This show, it did look expensive.
At the time. But like, I went back to look at like a clip of it, and like, this looks very CG
it's
now.
Like, there's a lot of extras, there's a lot of costuming, there's a lot going on. Yeah, they got to CG the back and stuff, and yeah, they compress 25 years of history in really a short period of time. And sometimes they made time jumps where it's like, and now the kid is older, so I guess time passed or whatever.
It's just, I
really liked it.
I liked it for a while, and it sort of started to drag for me. But like, as a Game of Thrones fan, like watching the first season of the show, I had read the books, I knew all the stories, and I was like, the effects suck dick. And then the seasons we're in now, like the show looks, you cannot hold that up against how Rome looks.
No.
Game of Thrones looks so much better, and it's fifth, sixth, what did we just pass? Sixth season?
We're coming into seven.
Yeah, the sixth season looks amazing visually. Rome cannot hold a candle to it.
It's so weird that they got back into the business with Game of Thrones, because Game of Thrones is way more expensive than Rome was, and Rome was a budget buster.
It's also more interesting.
Well, you know, if you like Game of Thrones, I think that a lot of Rome will still appeal to you, because there's a lot of politics and backstabbing and alliances and
literally,
all that stuff. And literal. And you know what? You do know some of the things that are going to happen.
Yeah.
But some of them you don't.
I still say watch Deadwood first.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, totally.
We're in agreement there.
It was the end of Rome, but also the end of two characters on Lost this week. March 20th, 2007, the Lost episode Exposé airs, which kills off the unpopular characters Nikki and Paolo. So,
who only appeared like that episode?
Only,
right?
Well, a couple episodes prior. So they were put on the show at the beginning, around the beginning of season three, basically saying, like, you know, all those background people who are just milling about, like the literal, like,
let's
background
learn about them.
Yeah, literal background actors that you'd seen, like, how come you don't see what those people are doing, but you get to see Jack and Kate and Sawyer and all them. So the posit was, they've been there the whole time. You just haven't noticed them. The episode showed them in the, like, basically discovering things that the rest of the cast wouldn't discover for, like, you know, multiple episodes later. Like, they found the hatch first. They found, like, the plane that had all of the heroin in it. Like, making all these discoveries before the rest of the cast. And then they betray each other, and both end up getting bit by a poisonous spider. So they're both paralyzed, buried alive at the end of the episode. And it was like, they're never coming back ever.
I wish I got your name. Somebody on Facebook described Lost like, I recognize the show doesn't hold up, and when you describe it, I start cringing.
Oh.
Because this is one of the, like, the fan least favorite episode, right?
No, it's good. People liked it. That liked that it, like, got rid of these characters that were not working out. Like, people, like, because I think the aim was to, like, have them around for way longer and be a bigger part of the show.
Newer contracts.
But it actually kind of redeemed their older episodes, because, like, there's, like, one episode, like, why is Paolo out on this excursion with the rest of them? Like, he just showed up this season, and now, like, Sora's like, hey, Paolo, you're coming with me. But then you see in this episode, like, oh, he was hiding, like, the jewels that he and Nikki stole.
But because
they're both, before they got on the island, they were both on this show called Exposé.
The commenter said, Because again, just hearing you talk about it irritates me to no end.
Okay,
like how much Lost spun its wheels.
And you talk about Lost 75%.
But he said, like, I wouldn't trade the experience. Yes. I wouldn't trade the experience for watching it live.
It was so great watching it.
It was an awesome experience. Yeah. But goddamn, does the show suck?
This is the epitome of spinning wheels.
Yes,
you're right. This is exactly what it is.
But I feel like this is. It was a wheel that was spinning that they finally are like, all right, let's tighten the screw
at this point. Yeah. At this point, they had realized they set the end date of the end of season 6 as the end of the show. So things start happening, which is like, that's what people wanted, and that's what started happening.
Before
and granted,
they go back in time?
Yeah.
No.
It's before they end up in the 70s.
It is.
Yeah. That's season 5.
That was on the dock when they pitched the show.
Oh, yes.
They got off the island. They came back. Things are happening. At least in like earlier in season 3, it was like, want to know where Jack got his tattoos? No.
No.
Yeah.
This has no meaning whatsoever.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, so I'll stop talking about Lost for now.
Sorry,
for
it wasn't
now.
Okay.
The season finale is coming up.
And I'll start talking about something that you love, sports.
No!
A lot of sports-themed things happening this week. March 24th, 2007, Peyton Manning hosts SNL.
I will say,
he's one of the better sports hosts
athlete
of SNL.
Host.
Oh,
like,
okay.
He's up there with, like, Charles Barkley, I would say. Like
George Foreman.
But, like, Charles Barkley, I think, is the only sports guy who's ever come back. But, like, Peyton Manning... He's willing to ham it up, which, like, a lot of athletes don't do, like Nancy Kerrigan or Michael Phelps. Like, they're just so, like, drab. But, like, Peyton Manning, bit of a goof, has one of my favorite all-time SNL skits. Hard to find online because it uses licensed music. Mm-hmm. So it's Will Forte plays a coach who's trying to inspire his basketball team by playing a motivational song, which is... Casino Royale by Herb Albert, which is a very cheesy song.
Oh, it's coming to Classic Corner, I think, next week, after. Oh, yeah.
And basically turns into Will Forte doing an interpretative dance to the song. You guys will have to watch it later on because it's one of my favorite skits of all time. Reinforces that Will Forte is one of the best SNL cast members ever. I put him on my top 5.
I sometimes even forget he was on.
And now he's still still doing hilarious stuff with Last Man on Earth.
Yep.
Oh god, he's so good.
Sort of sports-ish is the competition of the Surreal Life Fame Games, which ended this week.
Oh, really?
Faster.
They had their own real world road rules challenge for the Surreal Life.
So they did like 3 seasons of the Surreal Life, which was like basically the real world of C-list celebrities.
Live in a house together.
They all live in a house together. This is their competing for money, which they all desperately need.
It's just so evocative of people, like television programming having no respect for your time.
Respect for your time, and this is like peak desperation, like reality desperation era of like, please make me famous. I just want to be on TV.
You didn't want to see Vern Troyer, China, Vanilla Ice, and Ron Jeremy take part in competitions for money.
I really didn't.
But
I was too busy playing Art and Delica.
You're putting jewels in
and preteen
backs.
Girls' backs. Yes. Yes, Dave, that's what I...
So the winner of Surreal Life Fame Games, I know you guys are dying to know,
was
Tracy Bingham, who used to be on Baywatch.
Bingham? I hardly
knew. Yeah, she won the $100,000 GoldenPalace.net grand prize.
How did I know they had to be involved?
In case you wasn't. Wanted to make sure it was...
This show's wasting my time 10 years later. God.
You have to redeem that. You only get $100,000 of golden tee credit.
Yeah.
You can play the golf game at any bar in the country.
You get a pre-order hat for Cabela Buck Hunter.
The competition raged on into March 30th, 2007, the final episode of Celebrity Deathmatch aired. It had aired from 1998 to 2007. Sorry, 1998 to 2002, and they got revived in early 2006. Final episodes matches included Barry Bonds versus MLB Commissioner Bud Selig, because it's steroid thing. Anna Kournikova versus Danica Patrick. So tennis versus...
I forgot Anna Kournikova existed.
Me too.
And with some sly cross-promotion, Jackass's Chris Pontius against famed wheelchair athlete Mark Zupan.
What?
I don't know.
That's my favorite candy top.
Man, it's hard to defend Celebrity Deathmatch because it's so fucking cornball, but it's just... It's perfect. And we do the same thing, like, every Sunday.
We do.
But it was, like, a dumb thing that they did, like, during the final season, where it's like, let's put an MTV guy in this one match.
We also stream the... There's a game of it.
Yeah.
And if you think Surreal Life had to scrape the bottom of the barrel, Celebrity Deathmatch, the PlayStation 1 game, had to... They could only get people who would agree to having their likeness in the game.
Oh,
so it's like Carrot Top versus Mr. T versus Jerry Springer.
And believe me, I'm being selective with the reality shows I put in here. This is a big one. Yeah. I'm not talking about, like... the sons of like three producers mm-hmm. getting their own reality show on some dumb shit network. Like mm-hmm. this is at least you know who the people on the Serial Life are.
Mm-hmm.
I think
I feel like this reality shows have come in waves, and the first wave was like celebrities be celebrities. Yeah. People who had already competed on other reality
shows.
Stupid
Anna Nicole Smith show into the Osbournes.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it was let's follow famous people around, and then it's like, well, let's just follow some assholes around. Yeah.
And I believe the Surreal Life
might
have as many spin-offs as All in the Family.
Yeah. It is insane.
Actually,
poor
assholes, too. That's what the fucking Mama June and all them shit's about.
Yeah.
Everybody's got a goddamn reality show, and they're all boring.
I'm off the top of my head, it's Surreal Life, that had the Fame Games, then they had the Bridget Nielsen Flava Flav thing. That led to Flava Flav having The Bachelor.
And what, the Brady one?
My Fair Brady. They're branching out in different directions.
Oh, games this week.
So then from that was I Love New York. She was a contestant on the Flava Flav romance show.
Like, this is the Batman the Animated Series of reality shows.
Then that had its own real world Road Rules challenge with I Love Money.
Oh, my God.
And then they didn't...
I'm Jim Money.
That should have been the last act of society.
Well, you know what?
The reality show called I Love Money.
Well, then we elected the president of all of them.
They didn't air the final season of I Love Money because one of the cast members murdered their girlfriend. So.
Why I laughed at that.
Yeah.
Oh, did he win?
God.
They didn't air it, so you don't know who won it. Rumor is he won it, but they put
mentally unstable people on these shows.
Yes.
They even brought Dr. Drew in to do that on purpose.
Oh, God.
Week in 2007. Medal of Honor Vanguard. We are still.
Oh, we got to make room for that.
We're still. I'm good. Well, we are talking about it already longer than I wanted to. We're still pre-Modern Warfare. Call of Duty has not turned into Modern Warfare, so we're still squeezing out the last of the World War II shooters.
Was this on current gen platforms?
PS2 and
Wii.
That's
what I thought, yeah.
PS2 and Wii, a big stinker. Metal Slug Anthology on PS2.
Hey, love it.
Collection of great 2D shoot 'em ups. Elder Scrolls IV Shivering Isles, the second big expansion to Oblivion. 30 hours of new quests, locations, characters. Elder Scrolls is still one of those series that I've just never touched. No Skyrim, no Oblivion, sadly.
I've touched it.
Splinter Cell Double Agent came to PS3, which we probably talked about more last year when it was on Xbox 360. It came late. Sam Fisher is his haircut. I think this is when he goes into prison as a double agent. But I guess the biggest game this week would be Command & Conquer 3, Tiberium Wars. Which returns the series to its RTS roots. Command & Conquer taking this weird turn for a long time. And now it's following up 1999's Tiberium Wars storyline. And the cutscenes are live action. And the number of, I would dare say, B-stars. Wow. B-stars. So here's two people interacting.
Yeah, I remember
one,
the marketing.
One you'll know. Let's see if you can guess the second one.
We also have a new acting director, Redmond Boyle. He's the former GDI Treasury Commissioner. I know what you're thinking. But that's our succession protocol. Everybody above Boyle in the chain of command went down with the Philadelphia. Look. The good news is Boyle's a sharp man with control of the purse strings, and we're going to need every penny we have to win.
Do you know who this is?
It's not Michael Ironside?
It is Michael Ironside.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He's also Sam Fisher. So
he is? Wow. Yeah, he's Sam Fisher. And then the new character that they're introducing here who's going to walk in.
General Granger, Redmond Boyle, this is an honor. Truly. You had no idea I was coming. I apologize. But I was touring the area, and I wanted to stop by and offer my gratitude for what you're doing.
It's not Stacey Keach.
It's not Stacey Keach.
Billy Dee
Williams.
Billy Dee Williams! Lando!
And another one that surprised me, because I actually remember this.
Mm-hmm. When this all works out, tell Kane who drew up the plan.
So you're the one everyone's been talking about.
Josh Holloway.
Oh, man. Legendary insurgent.
That was great. He started talking. We all looked at Dave. Dave?
I hope you're as good as they say you are, Commander.
I'm never going to get the birthday quiz, but I can get that at least.
Shut up and press start.
So we're throwing you right in the frying pan.
But yeah, Command & Conquer 3 is supposedly pretty good. Bring us to the end of the show. A couple of comments from 302010.net. Again, some of the comments we've read the last few weeks have been great. I do try to read all of them. Well, I do read all of them and then try to get as many in here as I can.
What's it, load-bearing aristocrat?
A load-bearing Simba from the Simba. period-soaked... what a story.
Please.
Celestial Masshole Although I remember loving 300 as a teenager, I was the ripe age of 13 when it was released.
Oh, perfect.
We just talked about 300.
It made him hit puberty, I bet.
Yeah. My fondest memory in the film was photoshopping Gerard Butler's face onto Mario Kart characters and the Wii Music drummer for an E3 contest you guys had at Talk Radar.
Oh, shit.
Are you sure you did that in 2008?
Yeah.
All of those memes together.
I won myself a 300 special edition Blu-ray, which I never watched.
Our belated apologies.
Yeah. Guitar Creep Show says, I still remember what I had for dinner 20 years ago on the night I played Turok for the first and last time.
Wow.
The game gave me such motion sickness I'd ever had to the point which resulted in me painting the bathroom in puke. I'm still unable to play or watch an FPS for more than 10 or 15 minutes without feeling sick to my stomach. And if you're wondering, I had spaghetti that night. And finally, well, two more. Brindolf, you know, I quite liked, actually, a lot of folks stepped in to talk about Stargate. Mm-hmm. SG-1.
They did. We were given the business over that
to
one.
Say, well, we asked for the business, and we
it was
were given
good. No, I liked. I got some basic explanations of what was the story going on.
I mean, have you read those episode descriptions? They're so foolish. So bad. Why would anyone watch this show? All right. That's just leftover Lost Rage. Sorry.
Brendolph says, you know, I quite liked SG-1 in my teenage years. It was one of those shows that was always on when I got home from school. It was a decent Planet of the Week show. I don't remember too much from it. Don't think I've had an ongoing arc. It felt more like Star Trek Light or Murica Saves the Universe. I don't think I'd ever revisit it, but it was a good lighthearted show that you needed after you got home from a long day at school or work.
Sounds good.
And finally, Jar, let me tell you all about Typo Negative's Dead Again.
Oh, boy.
Which turned 10 years old. That record is a blast from front to back. Just about every track starts with some wicked guitar hook. Then you've got Peter Steele, the one-man druid choir, laying down some angelic melodies. Then you're back to catchy guitar riffs. It came about during an important time for me, and I played that record front to back countless times. It's such a shame Steele died young, which, for the record, no one believed at first because he pranked his fans by faking his death once or twice before. And what a great band. They never took themselves seriously. That goth image they're associated with is actually quite misplaced. Mm. Big fan. Every album is so good. And again, Typo Negative and Stargate SG-1 were the two biggest reactions from last week.
Mm.
This show has done its purpose.
Yeah.
And moving into deaths, famous deaths this week. 1987, Maria von Trapp, age 82.
Yeah.
Maria von Trapp, what did she do?
Sound of Music?
Sound of Music, yes. That's, I mean, that's adapted from a real story.
Wow.
Maria von Trapp was a real person. Apparently not very nice.
Died in 87, age 82, 30 years ago. And that's the end of the show.
Yay.
Go to 302010.net and follow along each week, every Thursday. We're on iTunes, we're on Wondery.
Leave some feedback. Yes, Wondery.com.
You can go to 302010.net and follow along every week. New episodes every Thursday. Mm. And the show is brought to you by our Patreon, patreon.com/lasertime, because you all helped unlock it.
Yeah, if you want a ton of movie commentaries, just rattling off Fargo we have on our Patreon. The low cost $5. You can get that, like 50 other commentaries. Video commentary for the first episode of Power Rangers.
And we did the movie.
And we did. Oh, we did the do the movie. Bleck, 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 bleck. If you want to revisit it, you might as well do it with us.
Pretty
while
sure
we
I spilled beer during it, so you can see me do that.
Oh, is that the one you spilled beer on the keyboard?
Yeah. Right?
Henry's got two. You got one.
Yeah.
I am clean as a whistle.
I still got to fall through some door, though, to really tie things up.
There's no water closet.
Yeah, Patreon is also the home of Cheap Popcast, the pro wrestling podcast. Mm-hmm. If you enjoyed our talk about WrestleMania 3 here, we talk about wrestling all the time, and probably around this point. No, actually, a little bit later, we'll have the WrestleMania 33 episode of Cheap Popcast where we discuss the fucking 7-hour event that it will probably end up being.
And if you like us and you like the format of the show, we do Laser Time. It's the show that comes out every Monday. It's more topic-based. Mm-hmm. It surprised me. One of the topics we did a long time ago was Power Rangers ripoffs, the ripoffs that came in the wake of the Power Rangers. But we've never done a Power Rangers episode.
Yeah, so I've tasked myself with trying to encapsulate 20 years of Power Rangers.
Oh,
and so we
25 years of Power Rangers.
And if you like King Kong or you're looking forward to Godzilla, we have a newish episode about the sizes of monsters and who is the biggest. Turns out we're all wrong.
No, we're not. That thing's wingspan doesn't count.
And we stream the most insane King Kong game ever on our YouTube channel.
Yeah, give our YouTube channel a look. YouTube.com/lasertime.
Did you know Konami made a King Kong game about love?
/ Lasertime.
Isn't every King Kong about love?
I guess it is. It's what beauty kills him every time.
Yep. Damn. Mm-hmm. Oh, I get you. Anyway, you want to hear more about video games? There's also Video Game Apocalypse, which is just a video game show. Mm-hmm. And if you want to talk about old movies and shit, I am on Twitter at LaCineNerd.
LaCineNerd.
Oui.
And that brings us to the final segment of the show. It's time for them birthdays.
Oh,
but I'm going to try to shorten this, and rather than read the names of the birthdays, which I already did that for a whole year, I'm trimming it down to just the quiz.
See, now I'm going to win, because I think that's what threw me off all those times. Okay, all those names before.
I'm doing a twist to the quiz. There will be one male and one female quiz each
time. All right.
So get ready. Born in 1940. Mm. So this person had a birthday in this range, March 23rd through whatever.
male or female?
Yes. Born in 1940. Mm. Was on the TV show Las Vegas.
James Caan.
Fuck.
Yes.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
I was just getting there.
Sunny.
I thought that would be the one, like, nobody watched this show.
Didn't.
For what it's worth, he was also an Elf, Misery, and starred alongside Al Pacino in a popular movie.
And Bottle Rocket.
And now, born in 1974, she was in Boys and Girls. Veronica Mars.
Kristen.
My stepmother was an alien.
Oh, balls.
Is it Kristen Chenoweth? Bell?
What?
Kristen Chenoweth?
No.
Kristen Bell.
No.
Hit show that just wrapped up its ninth season one.
Allison Hannigan.
There you go.
Yeah.
Willow herself.
With the sweep! Oh!
Nice.
I may not beat you at Mario 3, later time, but I kick ass on this quiz. And the plugs.
Yes. But taking us out of the show this time, we have another special promo from our friends at Wondery, which is the network 302010 is on, and they're premiering a new show called Inside Psycho that Diana is rather taken with, from what I hear.
I really enjoyed it. They sent us a thing saying, like, hey, could you, you know, check out the show, and, you know, here's a sample, and listen to it. And I listened to the sample. Well, first Brett just kicks it to me, like, oh, it's about movies. Here you go, Diana. And I loved it.
What's
and
it
then
about?
They gave me the whole thing, and I binged the hell out of it. It is about the making of the film Psycho.
Wow.
Basically, but it also goes into a lot of depth into the more disturbing aspects of where the story for Psycho came from.
Mm.
And it's not just sort of like they're just like reading a story to you.
Mm.
It's really, really immersive with lots of like sound effects and music, and it's sort of mixes, you know, there's some fiction elements in it even, and it's immersive is the only word I can use to describe it.
I call it well produced.
It's like an old radio show in that it's like a movie playing in your mind, and you feel like you are there, and the story of Psycho it's a really interesting point in film history. It's an interesting point in, you know, Hitchcock's career, and yeah, and then the background, yeah, if you're squeamish and have not heard about Ed Gein, oh Lord.
I thought we talked about him on one of our films.
Probably. Well, he inspired Psycho, Silence of the Lambs, and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Man, what a pioneer.
He was an interesting individual. But yeah, going into Janet Leigh's background and you know how they had to make this movie on the cheap, and what was people's reaction to it, because it was so ahead of its time, because it's kind of the first slasher movie.
It is amazing.
And it's still so watchable.
Anthony Perkins
so good.
Gives like a performance that's like 20 years ahead of its time.
Yeah.
I
Vince Vaughn was in this movie.
No, he was not. They'll get there.
I'm taking you out to the woodshed, young man.
Well, that's why we're spinning off into Inside Gus Van Sant Psycho, a much less popular version of this show.
Yeah. No, Inside Psycho, I think it's six parts. It moves really fast. And like I said, it's like being told a really good story. Oof. It just plays in your head. Oh, I really, really recommend it. So that's it.
And Wondery gave us the first half of episode one to kind of flow into here naturally. And if you like what you hear, check out Inside Psycho on WonderyWondery.com. And you can find 302010 there as well. But we will be back next week with more of what happened 30, 20, and 10 years ago.
The following contains mature content. You've been warned. From Wondery, I'm Mark Ramsey, and this is Inside Psycho. November 16, 1957. A freezing cold morning at the beginning of a brutal winter in the tiny hamlet of Plainfield, Wisconsin. Bernice Warden, 58, was just opening up the hardware store she'd owned for many years. Warden's, it was called, right over there on East Main. Everybody in town knew Bernice. She was good folk. Good morning. Antifreeze? It's over there on the end cap. Okay, a half gallon. That'll be 54 cents. I need one more thing. Okay, sure. Plainfield, Wisconsin. It was the kind of small Midwestern town where hunting was a way of life. Everyone owned a gun. Sure, wardens sold guns and rifles lined up against the back wall. Bernice Warden didn't see the man wander to the back wall. She didn't see him lift a .22 caliber rifle off the shelf. She didn't see him load a round. She didn't see him wait for her at the counter. And then she did. He wasn't buying the rifle. He was aiming it at her head. The man dragged Bernice Warden's lifeless body out of the store and onto a truck. He removed the cash register. Not because he wanted to steal it, he said later, but because he wanted to take it apart and see how it worked. That was his thing, to see how they worked. And then, slowly, casually, he drove away. The door to the hardware store was locked. The lights were on. Midday Saturday. The store was closed, empty, desolate. And Bernice Warden had vanished. Just one thing was left behind, one thing, a receipt. A receipt for one half gallon of antifreeze made out to a Mr. Ed Gein. When the police later raided the man's ramshackle farmhouse, an unimaginably grotesque nightmare was revealed. They found the body of Bernice Warden. And when you see a picture of her body in that state, you literally can't unsee it. There she was, hanging upside down by the ankles, stripped naked, her ribcage ripped open. She was disemboweled, as one witness put it, dressed out like a deer. In the kitchen, sitting in a pan of water on top of the man's pot-bellied stove, Bernice Warden's heart. By a table, burlap sack. Something round inside, a human head. Bernice Warden's head. Word spread fast about the hell unleashed in Plainfield. From there, if you take Wisconsin 22 to US 10 East to Wisconsin 110 North, about 35 miles, you come to the town of Weowega. There, a writer, Robert Block, devoured every detail. He had a couple books to his name already, but the story of this strange man in Plainfield gave him an idea. And that idea became a book. A book which was optioned by a famous Hollywood director and became a legendary movie. Why'd you do it? That's what they asked Ed Gein. Why'd you do it, Ed? Well, she reminded me of my mother. This is the story of a movie that almost didn't get made. A movie where the star dies after only 47 minutes. A movie its studio hated. A movie the New York Times called a blot on an honorable career. A movie now regarded as one of the finest ever made. A movie that changed everything. From Wondery, this is a six-part deep dive inspired by the story behind an unforgettable classic movie. This is Inside Psycho. We'd like to learn more about you. Please complete a short survey at Wondery.com/survey and subscribe to this show on iTunes, Stitcher, the Wondery app on Android, or wherever you listen. It's free. For more information and to comment on this show, visit our website, wondery.com/InsidePsycho. If you like the show, we'd love you to give us a 5-star rating and a review. It helps others go Inside Psycho 2. Written and narrated by Mark Ramsey. Sound design and editing by Jeff Schmidt. Produced by Mark Ramsey Media. Executive producers Jeffrey Glazer and Hernan Lopez for Wondery. Please thank us by rewarding our sponsors with your support. Tell your friends about this show. And Mother, thanks you.